he says to Vyasadeva, whatever you desire to describe that is separate in vision from the Lord simply reacts with different forms, names and results to agitate the mind as the wind agitates a boat which has no resting place. Purport, Sri Vyasadeva is the editor of all descriptions of the Vedic literatures, and thus he has described transcendental realization in different ways, namely by fruitive activities, speculative knowledge, mystic power, and devotional service. Besides that, in his various Puranas, he has recommended the worship of so many demigods in different forms and names. The result is that people in general are puzzled how to fix their minds in the service of the Lord. They are always disturbed about finding the real path of self-realization. Srila Narada Devi is stressing this particular defect in the Vedic literatures compiled by Vyasadeva, and thus he is trying to emphasize describing everything in relation with the Supreme Lord and no one else. In fact, there is nothing existent except the Lord. The Lord is manifested in different expansions. He is the root of the complete tree. He is the stomach of the complete body. Pouring water on the root is the right process to water the tree, as much as feeding the stomach supplies energy to all parts of the body. Therefore, Srila Vyasadeva should not have compiled any Puranas other than the Bhagavat Purana, because a slight deviation from that may create havoc for self-realization. If a slight deviation can create such havoc, then what to speak of deliberate expansion of the idea separate from the absolute truth, personality of Godhead? The most defective part of worshipping demigods is that it creates a definite conception of pantheism, ending disastrously in many religious sects, detrimental to the progress of the principles of the Bhagavatam, which alone can give the accurate direction for self-realization in eternal relation with the personality of Godhead, by devotional service in transcendental love. The example of the boat disturbed by whirling wind is suitable in this respect. The diverted mind of the pantheist can never reach the perfection of self-realization due to the disturbed condition of the selection of object. Tatonyatha kinchana yad vivakshata pritag drishas tatkrita rupa namabihi nakarhichit kvapi chadustita matir labheta vatahata naurivaspadam. Translation: whatever you desire to describe that is separate in vision from the Lord simply reacts with different forms, names, and results to agitate the mind as the wind agitates a boat which has no resting place. Agyanatimirandhasya agyanam janashalakaya chakshurun miritam yena tasmai shri gurave namah. Vandeham shri guru shri yatafpadakamalam shri gurudna vaishnavamscha shri rupam sarvajatam sahagana raghunatam vitam tam sajivam. Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Maybe afterwards, not now. A poor Vyasadeva, he only did what he was supposed to do, and now he's getting a lashing, tongue lashing. His job is to, his very name Vyas means one who divides. He's supposed to divide the Veda to make it and expand on that by giving the Puranas and all the corollary literatures to make it accessible to the people in general, and he's getting blasted for it. You've done wrong. You didn't have. There's no need, Prabhupada writes here, to compare anything else except the Bhagavat Purana, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur also said, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, they both said, that if all the literatures in the world were taken out and destroyed, if the Bhagavat Purana remained, that would be better. There would be no loss. It would be better. Because this literature means that gives some knowledge or some concept or some entertainment. So Bhagavatam gives the actual knowledge of reality. And some feeling where people read for to get some entertainment, to get the different feelings, they're different. Therefore we have romantic novels, comic literature, pathos, tragedy. So but the mundane literatures, they expand the jararas, or the material ras, mellow. This is Anshasra, translated this as. Whereas the Bhagavatam, because it's based on reality, it is reality, Bhagavatam is Krishna. Then what is in there is, what is in Bhagavatam, the feelings that are generated from studying the Bhagavatam, from hearing the Bhagavatam, they are the pathos, comedy. Comedy is also not so much, but affection, all these different feelings on the purely transcendental platform, which is actually a benefit to the conditioned souls, and a benefit to the non-conditioned souls also. Do we need that? These lights on? You turn this off. Just. Is there light on in there also, or is that the sun coming inside? So Vyasadeva was doing some bridge preaching, as it's commonly known in modern ISKCON parlance, that you don't present the thing as it is, but you present something which is kind of in relation to it, something that will catch people's attention, with the idea that you bring them to this stage and then you bring them on to the higher stage of Krishna consciousness. And that's the idea of Vedic culture. Vanashramacharavata purushena parapuman vishnur aradyate panta nanyat tatto shakaranam. That every in Vedic culture means the social system is Varnashram. Everyone should engage in that, and the central object of Varnashram is worshipping Vishnu. Even those who are demigod worshippers, the demigod worship is actually supposed to be conducted with worship of Vishnu also. So even though they may not understand that, because they have a different idea, the demigod worshippers have a different idea. Lord Vishnu is known as Yageshva, so they think it's some kind of role he has. Just, so it's, they don't really understand what the purpose of it. The lack of understanding means that they're misled, even though they perform activities which are supposed to be for their uplift. But at least the idea is to prepare them for receiving Krishna consciousness, which no amount of karma, jnana or yoga can prepare one for Krishna consciousness. Because bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya. Bhakti comes from bhakti also. And more specifically, bhakti comes from bhaktas, or the devotees. So if one is following the Vedic culture, then the idea is that if he's following the Vedic culture but not in Krishna consciousness, then the idea is that he'll be more prepared to receive the message of the Bhagavatam, the message of pure devotion to Krishna. However, that's often not true. It's often not so. We find that there are so many personalities, just like Narada is instructing Vyasadeva. He also instructed Daksha, and Daksha wasn't ready to receive any such instruction. He was part of a very important part of the Vedic culture. I mean, a very, very major figure. From Daksha came so many different great, important personalities. But he wasn't ready to hear the message of Narada. He was upset. He didn't like it. He thought Narada is spoiling everything. Spoiling my sons. They're going to have good careers. Go ahead and be respectable members of society. And this Narada just comes along and spoils them and shaves them up and puts a big bag in their hand and sends them back to Godhead. So it's not necessarily true that if the concepts which are derivable from, it's not necessarily true that that the Vedas will give us a, the Vedic path is one of gradual elevation. It depends a lot on the attitude of the individual. But mostly the Vedic literatures are compiled in a way to attract people at different and engage people at different levels of realization, but they tend to become fixed in that misconception. What is that? Yepi anyadevata bhakta yajanti shodayan vitaha tepi mame vikontaya yajanti avidhi purvakam. That wasn't the verse I was looking for, but I'll say it anyway because it is related. That those who worship other gods, Krishna says, they worship me but without proper understanding. So it is worship of Krishna, but it's indirect. Then what was that other one? Tasya tasya achalam. How does that verse begin? Tasya tasya achalam shratam tameva vidatami aham. How does that verse begin? I can't remember. Anyway, the purport is that Krishna says, those who worship various gods, various demigods, being misguided in doing so. We got to know where it is. Ah, here it is. Yo yo yang yang tanun bhakta shadhaya achita mitchati tasya tasya achalam shadham tameva vidya vidya. Tameva vidatham yaham. Is that those who worship various demigods, why do they worship in the previous verse? Kamais taistai shutagyana prapadyantena devataha. Because to fulfill materialistic desires. So why? What happens is that they worship those various demigods, and Krishna says, I make their faith strong. I, as this Paramatma, make their faith strong. So that's true of whatever concept one may hold. That Krishna, he's sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto matasmriti jnanam apohanam cha. He's situated in everyone's heart, and from him comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So when we desire to forget Krishna, Krishna helps us. Because we want. He doesn't forcefully bring us to him. He, to a large extent, he leaves the job of delivering the conditioned souls to his devotees. That is the glory of the preacher. Krishna works through the preacher to change the mind of those whose mind is made strongly against Krishna consciousness with the help of Paramatma. So it's true that the Vedic culture is elevated, and it's meant to elevate us to Krishna consciousness, but in and of itself it doesn't. Now, if Vyasadeva had, here we see one side, that he's being scolded for having compiled so many books which don't clearly delineate the supremacy of Krishna, and the the single need of the jiva to worship Krishna. He doesn't have any other needs. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha, these are not needs. They are imagined needs for persons who do not realize that they need Krishna. There's no need to strive for dharma, artha, kama, moksha, because dharma is only factually fulfilled when we worship Krishna. All other dharmas are simply perversions of actual dharma. And as far as artha, then Krishna himself says that ananyas chintayanto mang ye janah paryupasate teshang nityabhi yuktanam yogakshemam bahamyam. For those who are single-pointedly dedicated to me, I provide everything that they need. There's no need for endeavor for economic development. And as far as kaam is concerned, desire, a devotee doesn't desire anything separate from Krishna, and he's fully satisfied in serving Krishna. He doesn't need to desire separately from Krishna. Indeed, his his desire to serve Krishna is the very symptom of his disease and the cause of his bondage in this material world. As far as moksha is concerned, that's also automatically taken care of by Krishna consciousness. Muktir hitvanyata rupam vyava swarupena vyavastiti. Liberation means to be situated in one's original position of service to Krishna. So moksha, which is conceived of separately from Krishna, that's maya, just like here in the verse. Today, Narad Muni says, whatever you desire to describe that is separate in vision from the Lord simply reacts with different forms, names, and results to agitate the mind as the wind agitates a boat which has no resting place. So that desire for moksha, the moksha kankshis, those who wish to be free from the bondage of this material world, they want to be free from maya, but the desire to be liberated without the serving Krishna, that's also maya. So they don't really know what maya is, because we have to, what is maya? Ritertang yat pratiyeta na pratiyeta chatmani tadvidyad atmano mayam yatha bhaso yatha tamaha. Maya means, just like it's stated here, it's practically parallel, that Krishna says that the maya is my energy by which the conditioned soul conceives of anything as being separate from me, because everything is, there's nothing but Krishna. There's nothing separate from Krishna. Seeing anything as separate from Krishna, that is maya. It may seem like it has some substance, but it has no more substance than the slight reflection in the darkness. So there's no need to pursue all these things. The only real need, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made clear, pancham purushartha, the fifth need of the living beings, is prem, prema prayojan. Our real need is prem, love for Krishna. Krishna bishayak prem, pancham purushartha, jara age trina tulla chari purushartha. He said that the real need of the living being, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, is love of Krishna. And in comparison to this, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha are just like some straw, insignificant. So, therefore, Vyasadeva is being scolded, although he was doing his job. Now, it often is seen that in Krishna conscious understanding, it's often seen that there is more than one perspective on any issue, and that what is sometimes considered bad can from another perspective be considered good. It all has to be considered in what is good and what is bad, that has to be understood in terms of development of Krishna consciousness. What is anukul yasya sankalpa, pratikul yasya varjana? What is favorable for advancement in Krishna consciousness? What is detrimental to that? Everything should be understood. Even the Vedic injunctions. We have to follow Shastra, but the Vedic injunction should be considered in terms of whether this activity is actually conducive for my developing Krishna consciousness or not. In the beginning, one that doesn't have the discrimination cannot clearly understand. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that in the beginning stages, one should continue to follow the rules and regulations of Shastra, even those which are opposed to Krishna consciousness, in the beginning stage of devotional life, until we develop the clear discrimination of what is favorable and what isn't. Better we follow everything, because if we try to discriminate ourselves, then we may start throwing out the things which are actually required. There may be other reasons for this also, that it may, in the beginning, one is not ready to cause the social disturbance that is caused by Hindu society by not following all the rigid rules of the smartas, which everyone is expected to follow. So what is favorable for Krishna consciousness and what isn't, that has to be understood. And based on that, we can understand what is good and what isn't. But then it may be different for different people, just like if someone is newly coming to Krishna consciousness and they tell us, well, now I'm chanting one round daily, we say, oh, that's very good, it's very good. And then if an initiated devotee comes and tells us, I'm chanting one round, they say, what? Why are you chanting 16 rounds? So, the same thing, they're both jivas, but one say I'm chanting one round, very good. The other says I'm chanting one round, very bad. So, that's just an example to show how worshipping demigods and following the Vedic path, which is not directly the path of Krishna consciousness, here Narad Muni is saying very bad. But, in if we see someone who's following the Vedic path, compared to the life of an average New Yorker, for instance, just because we happen to be in New York, then it's very good. Sometimes our devotees, they say, oh, smarta, smarta, oh, smarta, oh. We don't like smartas, but they don't realize, actually, smartas, in comparison to us in many ways, because we never learned, even Vaishnav Smriti, we never learned how to follow that. So, in many ways, they're leading a very pure and religious life. They're certainly a very moral life, if they're actually smarter. So, they're very elevated and cultured. Nowhere, not Krishna conscious, maybe, but in comparison with the average person off the street in New York, a very highly cultured, and religious, and purified in their habits, and moral in so many ways, so much good qualities. But if we compare to Krishna consciousness, to act pure devotional service, then we can say they're barking up the wrong tree, because they're following all these religious processes, but it's not going to carry them back to Krishna. In fact, the smarter outlook is so much condemned, because it's antithetical to Krishna consciousness. It shouldn't be, but the way it's often observed or followed in the world is. So, here it's suggested that there should only be the Bhagavad Purana, but the problem here is that Bhagavad Purana is it's highly esoteric, and Vedang Vasa, what is that? Paramo Nirmat Saranam Satam, it's meant for persons of the topmost Paramahamsas, or at least those who are desirous to come to that position. So, who can appreciate this? People are a long, long way from understanding or having entrance into this pure devotional service. So the Vedic culture, it does prepare one, although I was just saying that it may tend to mislead one, but at the same time there is a certain preparation for Krishna consciousness. And we can factually see that in the Hindus, the Hindu society, that we can generally say that it's very clear that in general, Hindus are more inclined to Krishna consciousness than non-Hindus. There's some, as a general statement, it's at least in some form of Krishna consciousness. They may like their Ganesh pujas and everything mixed up, which it's not really the business of Islam, not at all the business of Islam to provide for all this. We're not supposed to keep them as pantheists and Hindus forever. We're supposed to teach them what is pure devotional service. But there's some kind of inclination is definitely there. That's undeniable. So it's a good start, we could say. And persons who have that inclination, if they can take association of devotees and be trained in the principles of Shuddha Bhakti, then and understand by Nityang Bhagavata Sevaya, by regularly hearing the Bhagavatam, that although the culture that they're raised in is very good, it includes the inclination to Krishna, but the the concepts, that many of the concepts that come along with it, are not on the platform of the Absolute Truth. All this demigod worship, and so if they can understand that, then they can become pure devotees. So it's a very easily, I mean, they'll more easily take to the chanting, and as is well known in these Western countries, they're more inclined to give donations, which is good for them, if we engage the money in promoting pure devotional service. If we engage the money in catering to their pantheistic tendency so they'll give more money, then it defeats the whole purpose. And we also become Hindus. We go down to their level. And that's the danger of bridge preaching, what we call bridge preaching. Instead of bringing, if we don't bring people onto the other side of the bridge, that means we're both stuck on the bridge. And we're supposed to cross over to the Krishna conscious side. The bridge means on one side there's non-Krishna consciousness, on the other side there's Krishna consciousness, and we want to bring people over. So we think, let's make a bridge. We'll talk about UFOs or Ayurveda or astrology or some such thing. And in this way we'll attract their interest, and then we'll bring them to Krishna consciousness. But often it's found that the same problem is being described here, that we just go onto the bridge and we stay on the bridge with them, or sometimes we cross back over to the other side with them. So these are some of the dangers and difficulties. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur especially, he was not at all in favor of bridge preaching. They didn't have any such term in those days, that was invented later, but he said that the only duty of the sadhu is to speak the truth in the most unequivocal manner possible, absolutely straightforward, without consideration of time, place, or circumstance. That means just everyone you see, punch them in the face, more or less, with Krishna consciousness. Give them a good blast. That was his policy. And it appeared to be very aggressive. Because I'm trying to remember the exact words as translated in the harmonies, that the pronouncements of the sadhu, they may appear very aggressive, but it only appears aggressive because the materialist feels, actually it's the highest nectar, but it appears aggressive to the non-devotees because it is actually an attack on everything that they're attached to, and they therefore they feel it as aggressive. But it's merely stating straightforwardly what is required for them. But because they think, well, I've got my all my material ambitions and attachments, and he's telling me this is all nonsense, I have to give it up and surrender to Krishna, and it appears very aggressive. But it's simply stating the fact, just like if someone's got a big boil on their forehead, and you tell them, you've got a big boil on your forehead, and they get upset, and they're stupid. Really stupid. So it's the same thing. To speak the truth, it's not popular. But truth is the truth. And if we speak anything else, but this, the problem in bridge preaching is that we're not speaking on the platform of truth. And the same, it doesn't have the power to bring one to Krishna consciousness. It's not even, by definition, it's not meant to bring one to Krishna consciousness, but to bring one to a stage whereby one can be gradually brought to Krishna consciousness. But the problem is that speaking some half-truth, we become accustomed to that. It's so much easier just to speak the half-truth, and then people, all right, could accept that. So we become accustomed to meeting people at a halfway level, and we tend to think that just being nice and making good relationships and making a good impression, that's preaching. If people like us, that's good. They like us. People like, a lot of people in New York at the moment like the Republican Party with this convention going on, and a lot of them anyway, it's Democrat. It's a Democrat stronghold, so a lot of people like Democrats. So the reason they like them are not very good reasons. So that people like us is not in and of itself a sign that we're on the right track. If they like us and know what we stand for and like us, that's very good. But if they don't know what we stand for and they just like us, then it's not very meaningful. And if we bend ourselves to suit what they like, then we're in trouble. So the clear pronouncement of the absolute truth, that is required, because this whole world, the whole atmosphere is one of untruth. And even for ourselves, if we're not constantly speaking Krishna Kirtan, Krishna Kirtan, that means not only Nam Kirtan, but Bhagavatam, speaking Bhagavad Katha, that is Kirtan. Vyasaki, Shukadeva Goswami is glorified as the symbol of Kirtan. He was speaking Bhagavatam, not singing. Otherwise we have Narad Muni, Bhajai, Vina, Radhika, Ramana, Name. You might have thought that Narad Muni would be the selected devotee that Rupa Goswami selected to demonstrate the principle of Kirtan, but he selected Shukadeva Goswami. So if we're not constantly speaking Kirtan, glorifying Krishna, then it's Akirtan, non-Kirtan. Kirtan means Kirti, to glorify Krishna, to state the glories of Krishna. So there's Akirti, Apakirti. There's non-glory or opposite or apparent but not actual. So there's Apakirtan. It's not actually preaching. If one is not speaking Krishna Katha, there are two kinds of Krishna Katha. Krishnasya Katha, Krishna Vishaya Katha. Krishnasya Katha, that which is directly spoken by Krishna. And Krishna Vishaya Katha, that which is spoken about Krishna in Parampara system. This is Krishna Katha. And anything apart from that is not Krishna Katha. And it has the tendency of speaking that is to bind us in illusion, to bind us in concepts of this material world. Now, pure devotees, they may also speak on apparently mundane topics such as history, science, geography, and so on. But they do so seeing the and not only seeing, but they do so. In doing so, they demonstrate its relationship with Krishna. Just like Prabhupada would sometimes talk about history, especially Indian history, quite often actually. And often devotees would bring interesting snippets from the news to Prabhupada. There's interesting things like now the scientists are talking about producing food from stool or food from oil and all these. They would bring all these points to Prabhupada and await Prabhupada's comments, which would inevitably throw light on all these activities of the materialists from the Krishna conscious point of view. So many. This material world, it's an unusual place, interesting place. Keshav Tua Jagat Vichitra, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. It's a strange place. This universe, it's a strange place. So, how to see everything in relation with Krishna and Krishna consciousness? How are you going to do that in New York? If you're in Vrindavan, it's pretty difficult to forget Krishna. Well, it's not so difficult for the conditioned souls, but it's certainly a lot easier to remember Krishna, because everywhere there are devotees and temples and lila sthalis, places connected with Krishna's pastimes. So it's Vrindavan itself is one big udipana, or stimulus for remembering Krishna. But where is that in New York? What everywhere we see, there's nothing but the loud propaganda that this material world is a place for our enjoyment and exploitation. How are we going to see Krishna everywhere? Well, that we can see from the example of Prabhupada how he saw Krishna everywhere. And he saw Krishna in everything. He saw the philosophy of Krishna consciousness demonstrated in everything. Just like, for instance, Prabhupada was walking in a park, and Prabhupada pointed his cane. He saw underneath a tree some compounded bird droppings. So Prabhupada pointed his cane and said, "What does this mean?" And he didn't know what to say. They're thinking maybe the way the bird droppings have fallen has some kind of mystic significance or something. You know, like they have this, they read the tea leaves. That must be completely bogus. People are so gullible, they're reading the tea leaves. Anyway, the devotees didn't know what to say. So Prabhupada said, "This shows this bird, these birds have attachment. They come to pass stool in the same place every day. They're attached to passing stool in this spot. There's so many trees with so many branches, but they feel, they're attached. I must come here and pass stool. This is my place for passing stool." So he was able to see Bhagavad philosophy in bird stool. Even in stool, you can see Krishna. Actually, Krishna is everywhere. He's not stool. We should be very careful in how we understand this. But he is in every atom and everything we can see in relationship with Krishna. If we have that vision. Yomam pashati sarvatra sarvam chamai pashati tasyang na pranashami sachame na pranashati. Krishna says, for one who sees me in everything and everything in me, I'm never lost to him and he is never lost to me. So this vision can be attained by one who is absorbed in Bhagavata. This is our spiritual food, Srimad Bhagavata. This is Vyasadeva's mature contribution, Vedyam Vastavam Atra Vastu. This is the actual essence of the Vedas. Everything else which is in the Vedas, it's not really Ved. It can be aparavidya. It's knowledge on the lower level, or on the non-transcendental level. But actual knowledge means that which is given in Srimad Bhagavata. So this knowledge we need to imbibe, because in this material world, everything we see and everything we do, and especially in a big materialistic city like New York, there's everywhere, there are advertisements and the way people dress and act and walk and talk. I was talking yesterday about culture. It all reinforces the outlook that everyone collectively shares, that this material world is a place for our enjoyment and exploitation. So unless we're fixed in the understanding of the real truth, that this is a place for your suffering, you cannot enjoy. We cannot. There's no question of our actual exploitation. We can only attempt to do so. Reality is Krishna. Unless we see that, then the tendency will be to see everything outside of relationship with Krishna, which is Maya. And we become entangled in that. That's why it's recommended. Go to Vrindavan, go to Mayapur, take advantage of that atmosphere. But those who have to preach Krishna consciousness, they have to come to the city. They have to see Krishna. If we don't see Krishna, how can we preach? We won't be preached. We'll be preached too. And we'll, by the forces of Maya, and we'll fall victim. So we have to be very strong by understanding the message of Krishna as it is, as given by Vyasadeva, as given by all the acharyas, as given by Prabhupada, in these purports. Then we can see Krishna in everything. Krishna is everywhere. And if we see Krishna by the process of hearing about him, then we'll be able to see Krishna everywhere. Whereas the non-devotee, he can't see Krishna anywhere. He's determined not to. Even if we try to show, here is Krishna, he won't see Krishna. He'll say, "Show me God." And even Krishna is everywhere for those who have the eyes to see. But for those who demand, "Show me God," they can never see, because they don't want to see. Even if they see, even if you show directly Krishna, they won't believe. "Oh, I don't believe this is God." Because they don't believe in God, then how are they going to believe? They're determined not to. Matena Krishna Paratasvato Vamit Mitobi Badyata Grihavratanam Adanta Gopiya Vishatanta Misra Gunafpunas Charvita Charvananam. They've made a very strong vow that I shall not be Krishna conscious under any circumstance. I won't even admit that there's a possibility of such a state of consciousness. Because the life is simply meant for sense enjoyment, for enjoying the uncontrolled senses. So they think like this, but as a result, they simply enter into the darkest ignorance and chew the chewed over again in the name of enjoying this material world. So Vyasadeva is getting a scolding. He didn't compile the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada would also, just like Narada was scolding Vyasadeva, Prabhupada was often, he would sometimes scold his disciples, you're not reading my books. My only complaint against my disciples, he said, was they're not reading my book. So there may be so many things to read. Krishna conscious literatures also. And non-Krishna conscious literatures, there are many things which which can be useful for, especially those for those who are preaching in this world. Even the newspaper can be useful because we can relate our preaching to bridge preaching. We can relate just like this material world is full of suffering. We can say just like Iraq, what's going on in Iraq? You see, there's some story in the newspaper that they give some story, some wedding party, and a very nice young man married a very nice young girl, and it was so nice. And then, as they were driving back from the marriage, their car skidded off the road, and they merged into the body of the car. It all became one. In other words, they got killed. And so we can say, just see, and then everyone be told, I saw it in the newspaper. Oh, how sad. And so you see, there's a material world. We can relate the teachings of Bhagavatam to that. But that's all right. We can say, I'm reading at the moment a book on the history of science, which is going to be useful for my preaching in India, because the young, educated people there are very much enamored by science. Just like Sadaputa Prabhu said to me last time I saw him, which was quite a few years ago, he was in India, that he said, in his estimation, the main god in the Hindu pantheon has assumed the primary importance is science. As I often say in India, it gets a laugh. But it gets a laugh because people can recognize the truth of it, that If we quote Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, no one will be interested. What's this? But if we say Sri Scientist Uvacha, must be good. Then they'll believe it. So if we know some things about science and this and that, it's very impressive to them.
He's talking about science. Oh, he must know what he's talking about.
They have that faith. And they find it interesting. If we just come in and immediately say Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, then immediately they'll pack up their books and walk out, in many cases, literally. So that could be called to be some kind of bridge preaching, which Vyasadeva did. But at the same time, they're dangerous. We have to see that if we read so many things. If we're not very firmly fixed in Bhagavad philosophy, which comes by Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, regularly studying Bhagavad Katha as received in the pure parampara, then we start to imbibe the attitudes and beliefs of the non-devotees. It's very dangerous, because then we're in Maya. We may not be able to become Krishna conscious. Because the non-devotee, by definition, is not Krishna conscious. So we should understand very clearly what our necessity is, what is the value of Bhagavatam. Even if we don't study anything else, Bhagavatam, and even in the water stream of Bhagavatam, even Bhagavad Gita itself is complete for all preaching in all times, places, and circumstances, because the Bhagavad Gita describes the position of this material world from Krishna's perspective, which means the complete and perfect perspective. It describes for the benefit of the conditioned souls how we can come out of this material world by thinking of Krishna. Krishna's last instruction, Manmana Bhavamad Bhakta. Always think of me and become my devotee. Of course, Bhagavatam is very useful for helping us to think about Krishna because it gives us more subject matter on the same topic of Bhagavad Gita, more information and understanding about Krishna and who is he, more about personal information about Krishna. So these literatures, Gita, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, by which we can actually understand Srimad Bhagavatam. We cannot actually understand Srimad Bhagavatam without Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is why Prabhupada gave the introduction of the Srimad Bhagavatam, a short overview of the pastimes and teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We can understand to some extent, as the Madhvacharya described, but actually Bhagavatam can only be properly understood through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's another whole big subject. So this is required, and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which puts all the teachings about bhakti and the Bhagavatam into perspective and teaches us how to practically act in Krishna's service and how to practically follow the path of bhakti yoga. So these literatures are essential, and there are many other literatures also, written by Prabhupada, written by previous acharyas, written by present devotees. So these are all the subject matter of Krishna consciousness, which we need to imbibe so that we can fulfill Krishna's instruction to us, which is meant for our benefit. Shunu me paramam vachah. Yatte ham priyamana yavakshami hitakamaya. Krishna says, you listen to this, which is my topmost instruction. I'm speaking this because I desire your benefit. And what is that? Manmana, but always think of become my devotee. So we can do so by understanding Bhagavatam. And anything else has the tendency to disturb our mind or to divert it to various other subject matters. Whereas Bhagavatam, if we read Bhagavatam, our mind is not going to be diverted to other subject matters. It's going to be concentrated on Krishna because Bhagavatam is Krishna. Bhagavatam is the Krishna in literary form. So Krishna has various forms. In the form of the deity, we offer food to him, dress him, and so on. In the form of prasad, we taste him. In the form of his name, we hear him. And in the form of the Grantha Bhagavat, the book Bhagavatam, we receive messages of Krishna. We find the description of Krishna. It satisfies the intellectual propensity and refines our emotions so that our thoughts are on Krishna. Thoughts, they can be analyzed in... There's even they talk about this, the right side of the brain and the left side of the brain, all this. Of course, Bhagavatam has got nothing to do with the brain, but they analyze that one side is for analytical thinking and the other is for intuitive thinking and emotions like this. So Bhagavatam is that philosophy and rasa, tattva-gyan and rasa. So tattva-gyan, bhagavat tattva-vigyanam mukta-sangasya jayate. By hearing Bhagavatam, we get scientific knowledge of the topics of Bhagavan, which fully satisfies us intellectually. Not only satisfies us intellectually, but we become convinced of the reality of Krishna. And then Bhagavat is rasa shastra. It is the there are so many rasa shastras. The Bhagavatam is the basis of all rasa shastras. So this Bhagavatam is meant for rasik devotees. That our emotions, our feelings, our attitudes, that is, that comes under the heading of rasa. So, Krishna, in the form of Bhagavatam, just like as name we hear him, as prasad we taste him. As deity we serve him in various ways. And as Bhagavatam we understand him and interact with him. So we need Bhagavatam, not any other shastra. Hare Krishna. Is there any question about this? Is that a question?
Yes. Narada Muni, he chastised Vyasadeva for Vedas which he had compiled. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Vidashya Savaya Neva Vidya. Actually, Krishna.
Yes.
Krishna bewilders the living entities.
What's the question?
So how can Krishna, in the name of religion, bewilder the living entities?
Well, I did cover this topic in the class.
Yeah.
It may be difficult to understand, but I did cover that in a little detail. Because the jivas want to be bewildered, Krishna helps them. But along with the bewilderment, he gives the opportunity and even some little trick to bring them to him. But if they're adamant not to, then Matiana Krishna Paratasvatola. They will not be if they're determined not to. Krishna doesn't force them to be Krishna conscious. Now we're questioning Krishna's motives. Krishna is the deepest thinker. He understands the situation. He understands everything better than we can. So even to analyze the mind of an insignificant living being, there is this science, psychoanalysis, to do so, but it's a very imperfect science. What do you say? No, do they teach you that at all?
No. They don't use it anymore. It's simplified now, cognitive.
Mm-hmm.
You say things over and over to yourself.
So, what to understand the mind of God? This rascal, who was that Stephen Hawking, finished off his book there. The Brief History of Time, that purporting that to understand the mind of God. He doesn't believe in God, but he's the only one. Science is his God. So, exactly why this is, it may be difficult for us to understand, but as in everything in Krishna consciousness, we can understand it by accepting it. And gradually understanding will come. If we understand that my understanding is incomplete, my understanding, for one point, it's subjective, and I'm just a tiny jiva, so who am I to make judgments anyway? And then also my consciousness is contaminated. So if I don't understand it, then we should understand that's due to my lacking, not that Krishna's wrong. But my understanding is lacking. So with that attitude, if we accept that God is good, even if I can't understand how He's good, if we accept that, then we can gradually or actually almost instantly understand. So many bad things may happen to us, apparently bad things. But if we accept it's not bad, actually it's all Krishna's mercy on me. Kirtananda Maharaj, that's his main point, which he was saying again and again. Thank you, Krishna, for now as it is, whatever it is. Whatever it is. Then we can see Krishna in everything. And how what Krishna is giving to us is the best possible situation. If I can see it like that, however apparently bad it may be, then we'll always be Krishna conscious. And we'll see, instead of seeing this is unfavorable, this situation is unfavorable, we'll see how we can be Krishna conscious in it. Actually, that's Paramahamsa platform. And in general, for Madhyamadhikari, we should see Anukalyasya Sankalpa, Pratikulyasya Vajram, to accept what is favorable for our advancement and to reject that which is unfavorable, and to make discrimination, just like who is a devotee and whose association you take, who I should take, who is a non-devotee and whose association I should not take. But for one who is a perfect devotee, there's nothing inauspicious in the world. Anyway. He sees the goodness of Krishna in everything. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. His divine grace Srila Prabhupada ki jai.